Is it all right, kid?
Yes.
No kidding.
So how have you been doing?
Fantastic. Hanging in here.
That's good.
Might end up talking about some of this political stuff that we got.
Yeah. You know, I haven't got a chance to read the material yet. This is my finals week, so I've been busy trying to, like, juggle my home stuff and do my finals.
My God.
What?
None of it? You didn't even read any on the plane or train or something coming back in?
Well, no, I drove back, and that was part of it. I was the only one who could drive, so I had to drive all the way back myself. And when I got here, I had two little babies on my door. I have two very, very small babies.
How old are your kids?
30 months and 12 months, so that's 2.5 and 1.
2.5 and 1?
Yes.
You got kids 2.5 and 1, and you were at a conference in Philly? How'd
yeah.
you do it?
You know, I hadn't gone out in years, and I hadn't been able to speak to people dealing with any type of political or conscious thought in years.
Why?
Because I'm married. Well, I was married, and I had a very domineering husband.
It ain't that much domination in the world.
Well, yeah, it is. It was. It is. There's other sisters who are dealing with the same thing, but it's cloaked under different disguises. It's cloaked under these children are what's most important, therefore, don't go out. Don't you go out. I'll go out, and I'll get the information, and I'll bring it back to you. But you stay here with the babies, and you don't go to school, and you don't go anywhere, and you don't do anything. But it's not said that way. It's said in a different way that anyone with some common sense seems to go for.
This is insane.
Yeah, it is insane, but it happens every day.
I mean, how long did this go on, like 3 or 4 years?
No, this goes on for lifetimes. It depends on the individual.
I mean, in your case?
Well, I've been married for 4 years.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I was married for 4 years, and he had the kids this weekend, or
okay.
that last weekend, so that's what the whole, and I didn't tell him what I was going for. I told him I was going for a job interview at Temple,
mm-hmm.
and as much as he would hate the idea of me working a job and stuff, he knew that, you know.
He doesn't like you working?
No, no working, no school. I mean, that's part of why we divorced, because I'm like, I'm going to school. I need mental stimulation. It drives me crazy talking to two people who don't really understand what I'm saying and who don't really talk back, who can't even form full sentences.
Tell me about it.
I need mental stimulation, and
yeah.
you're not talking to me, and you don't want me talking to anybody else. I'm going to school.
He wasn't talking to you?
I mean, you know.
I mean, y'all could have taken the kids to meetings and things.
Yeah, we could have. We could have.
I mean, why didn't it go through that way?
Well,
I mean, you could have gone... You could have had meetings in your house.
In our house. We could have done all of those things, but it was other issues too, Ken. It was issues of...
Like he was afraid that you were going to be taken from him or something?
Afraid of that. Afraid that I would get smarter than him, even though I was already smarter than him. And he was afraid of the fact that I was already smarter than him. It was more of, you don't do anything, you stand still, and you let me catch up, and then we can go do all of those things together.
No. What? Did you try to get him to go to school?
You know, I did, and he would do, and he did really well one quarter. He went to the community college in our area.
Well, why didn't he continue?
He did really well. Well, the first semester, first trimester, he dropped out and didn't tell me that he dropped out. So he would leave and pretend as if he was going and didn't say anything. He thought I'd be angry with him.
But why did he drop out?
I don't know. He said it was stupid, that he didn't like what they were teaching him. And I'm like, they're not saying that you have to accept that as your worldview. They're just saying this is what this class is about. If you want to get our piece of paper, you do what we say you have to do,
and
that's
it.
And you're out of there. And I said, and it's not that they're trying to say this is what you should believe. It is their job to teach you American history. This is what they call American history. Learn that. It's not to say that it's right or wrong. It's just information.
Matter of fact, it's very useful learning it from their perspective.
It's useful. It is. I said, you understand these people. You understand. I said, it's information. Information is not right or wrong. It's just information. It's something more to add to what you already have. But he did not have that understanding.
Man, I tell you, he blew that.
He did. And so that was a sister who came over, one of his friends, and we hadn't talked in a long time, so she decided to come over. And she was looking for him, and she didn't know that he was wasn't here. And we were just talking and stuff, and we were talking about some of those same issues about how my husband and a friend of his, how they were just so dominating and domineering in their music group, and just a whole lot of stuff that happened with that. And I just feel so sorry for so many sisters who continue dealing with people like that.
It sounds like fear.
It is. It's fear. It's insecurity. It's chauvinism. it's irresponsibility, competition, jealousy. I think that's the big six.
Let me turn it around like this. Why did you marry somebody that you were smarter than?
Well, that goes to some of my problems.
Which are?
I guess I don't really see myself in who I really am, and I don't judge people like that. I never saw him as being less intelligent than I was.
Probably technically isn't.
And he isn't, but he believes that he is because
there we go.
He does not have the pieces of paper that I have.
I see.
So he views
there
that,
we go.
He sees that as, you know, that's what the problem is. And that was never the problem. I always thought that he fully understood that I could never come up with a thought or concept. And then this is part of it. He pretended as if he understood a lot of things that I said. A lot of times he didn't, and he never said, well, wait, Makeda, what does that word mean? Or what does that mean? He looked at that as meaning that he was stupid if he didn't understand what I was saying.
I see.
So but I didn't think he was stupid.
His basic background in terms of formal education is very lacking. Say, did he make it through high school?
Yeah, he did.
So, but he wasn't, like, pursuing stuff afterwards. Probably couldn't
stand. And even once he finished high school, he took some time off, but
yeah.
He did go to college. He had gone to college before I met him, to a community college.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I met him, he was, like, in between school, and so was I. But I didn't know that his reasons weren't the same as my reasons. I took what he said at face value instead of standing back and looking for myself. I just thought, why would he? No one has a reason to lie.
Well, he really wouldn't have one, but there probably were some other issues going on and some real interesting questions
mm-hmm.
in the long run going on with him.
Yeah. And then it was some psychological things. It was some manic depression, a whole lot of other issues.
Manic depression can be handled.
It can be handled, and many times it has to be handled through medication.
Yeah, I mean,
but
you know.
You have to admit that that's the situation to get yourself to the people who will give you the medication, and then you got to take the medication.
That's the second problem. Usually it's best to be married so that somebody can assure that you are taking medication.
Yeah, but.
Because we've had some people around who have been, you know, they just get thrown off every now and then. And
yeah.
If they don't have a second person, they are sort of not so much monitoring, but it's sort of like.
Supporting them.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting problem.
Mm-hmm.
People stop doing things if nobody sort of, you know, is present. I mean, like,
yeah.
Body on site loving with them, you know. It's
yeah.
sort of an interesting problem.
It is, and it's something that I don't have a desire to be anybody's mom. I already got two kids. I'm not trying to raise anybody else's kids.
Yeah, believe it or not, you wouldn't end up being a mom in that case.
Yeah, I would be an enabler in most cases.
Well, yeah, nowhere near a mom, and you wouldn't feel bad, and it would only be periodic, and will only be when he's sliding.
Yeah.
You know, in all probability, if that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But good likelihood, a good deal of manic depressiveness can be handled without meds, you know?
Yeah.
A lot
but it's
of exercise
all about,
and stuff, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with diet, and drug abuse always seems to be connected in that. If people think that they can drink alcohol because it's legal, but it, or smoke marijuana because that's accepted, but
many times
people's bodies, the physiology, they can't deal with that. They can't deal with those chemicals.
None. Matter of fact, if he has experimented with any real heavy chemicals, then, and I mean only one or two experiments, coming back out of it will make him very manic.
Yeah.
And he'll maintain that probably for a good deal of his life.
Yeah, so he got a lot of issues to deal with.
And some questions.
Yeah.
And some questions.
Yeah, but it's not about to happen anytime soon because everybody around him continues to support where he's coming from and support him, and they want to attack me. So I'm like, oh, all y'all are real straight. Y'all can all go to hell.
Right on.
His whole family. I'm like, no one can see what I see. Okay, then. I'm the problem, so stay the hell away from me. Save yourselves.
It might not help you out too much in the long run. You might need some backup support for the kids. Are your parents around?
Well, my mom is manic depressive too, and she's just like him. And my dad's not around.
There it is. There it is. There it is.
What?
My mom is manic depressive just like him. She's
yeah.
just like him.
She is.
There it is. There it is.
There it is. That's why I got involved with him.
Women have a habit of marrying men who are a lot like their moms.
Not like their
physically,
dad?
New. It's very, in this particular culture at least, not like their fathers. They may look physically like their fathers. A lot of times I see sisters with guys who look a heck of a lot like their fathers.
You know, he looks just like my dad, and my kids look like my dad.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't act like my dad. He acts like my mom.
That's right. And that's what ends up happening. A lot of sisters, believe it or not, get really, if they had a good relationship with their father, that's what'll happen. You end up with the dudes, you're like looking like the daddies.
But, you know, I'm glad I'm able to see all of that now.
And the moms are going around, like your mom probably going around saying, that looks like a young one of thingamajig. Did he do something wrong? Or, yeah, I mean, you know, what is your last name, boy?
Did he have some kids?
That sort of sound out of the moms. Hey, come on in here, sister. We're having a little bazaar over here. I'm trying to get people to come in here. But they ain't exactly cooperating today. I don't know what's going on. I'm using all type of non-colloquialisms and colloquialisms over the phone. Hold on just one sec.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how this is going to run. Now, let me see. Oh, the phone's sliding off the table. Ooh, that is a mess. Yeah, let me go over here like this here and hold the phone over here and like this here. Hello. We have children's and baby clothes in the back. Louise is back there with them. Come on in.
You don't have children.
No? Talk to you soon. Back again. And, well, can't have everything.
Yeah.
We only got 30 minutes on this thing, you know.
Oh, really? How long have we been talking?
I don't know. Let me look at the phone thingy here. Where's the clock? Clock is... Oh, we're only... Well, we got another 20, about 18 minutes or something like that on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
we
I haven't read the
phone
material
call that I'm doing. I'm from the University of Pennsylvania with a sister. I'm going to buy some of y'all's cookies and stuff back here, too. This looks good. Yeah, back again, sister. You were saying?
I didn't get a chance to read any of the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have so much to do. I mean, God, I have so much to do. And he always tries to throw me off by saying he will do something and then not do it.
Yeah.
And so I have to find creative ways to get my studying going.
I know. Hold on just a minute. Let me give these two a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, sister. Hello.
Yes.
Hello, sister. Here you go. And if you want to, you can come on inside and wait. It's warm inside. Really is warm inside here. Yeah, back again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these two sisters are out there waiting for some dude, I think. I told them to come on inside if they wanted to. I'm over here at the bookstore today.
Okay.
And you didn't read nothing?
No. Hadn't really intended on reading it anytime soon. Probably next week I'll get a chance when all my class stuff is taken care of.
Now what am I going to do with this little one? Well, guess what?
What?
We're having a convention out there in January, February. Yeah, in February.
Where?
Cleveland.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Where's it going to be held?
Probably downtown Cleveland in one of those big hotel complexes you got going on.
We have those down here?
Yeah, I've been there before. We had one,
We have a Stouffer's down there. We got other stuff, too.
Yeah, you got a whole bunch of junk in Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah. We were there before for the convention and whatnot, and we're going to be there this year for the convention. So not this year. I mean, you know, 96 in January.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll be down there by January and whatnot. January, February. February, March, April, May. Hold on. Let me ask Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on just a minute. Say, Louise. Louise. That's all right. Let me see. I think it's February, May. I think it's May. Yeah, I think the convention's in May.
Really? Well, I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere.
Good.
That's not good.
Why?
Because I need to be getting out doing stuff.
Well, then get out and do stuff.
Well, I'm working on it.
See?
I'm working on it.
See? I ain't too bad, you know?
Yep.
What you need to do, really, is get a hold of the party and whatnot, right?
Get a who?
Get a hold of the people in the party and the structure and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
And then what?
I'd sit down and talk with them and see if they got any books and pamphlets and stuff like that. And then, you know, from there, you'd be in pretty good shape.
Okay, now this is Communist Party.
Of course. Now, you know we're on tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure that I knew what you were talking about.
Hey, it's the only one around, sister.
That's the only one around?
Only
so
one
what
around.
Are you guys doing, progressive in the black community?
Me?
No, just the party in general.
We're basically in support of the Mia Abdul-Jamal operation.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and that's from everywhere. We've got personnel, and it's official. We got personnel in all of the states that it's operating out of. We're operating on that whole piece.
Yeah, I know there's a serious communist presence here as far as organizing.
Oh, it's definitely serious. Ain't no problem, you know.
Okay, what about other stuff?
You mean like affirmative action and stuff?
Well, no, just any issues that have to do with black people, because that's really all that I'm interested in.
Well, you got to be interested a little wider than that, because the stuff interlinks. It's interesting. The stuff that affects me and you
mm-hmm.
affects everybody. And the stuff that interlinks
mm-hmm.
isn't just solely about our stuff. For instance, like African-American studies and whatnot. Communists basically support that sort of piece of thing
mm-hmm.
and would go along with it for any old sorts of ways of dealing with it, you know, particularly in school systems and things,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
just so it's on the progressive level. For instance, communists would support having affirmative action push forward and having people come into industry and not so much into management, because that's another problem that we got to deal with. But, you know, in terms of to industry and become industrialized and
mm-hmm.
operating inside of unions
mm-hmm.
and have no problem with affirmative action being applied inside of the workplace
okay.
and support it totally. I mean, it's just one of our practical purposes.
Yeah.
We're not about affirmative action for businesses, which is another sort of a problem that's running around. We support not only in the African-American community, because far more people are on welfare, for instance, and Social Security, who happen not to be African-American, than African-American. So we struggle for things like welfare reform.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, we've struggled to keep welfare move towards a greater end for supplying people so that they can be able to struggle against what's going on in this country all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We are for instance, in general, we're for providing everybody and guaranteeing everybody a job.
Okay.
And in this country, that's something that they would refuse. And I went to college around this portion of it and was shocked out of my socks when one guy stood up who was an instructor and said that capitalism does not guarantee you a job.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just sock shocked. I was.
Yeah.
I mean, my whole thing was, yeah, you get unemployed and all that stuff, but, you know, and he said that. I mean, I have been sort of holding on to that sort of notion that everybody deserves a job. Yeah, but it's not talked about under capitalism. That's not what capitalism even thinks about,
mm-mm.
you know, in terms of its whole philosophy and ideological perspective. It's not even there. You know, matter of fact, if everybody could be unemployed, they wouldn't care. It'd be a major problem. We're into free health care for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And guaranteed health care for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, you know, into basically providing welfare for everybody just so that they won't work.
Mm-hmm.
Under a system that we'd be dealing with, you would have, say, unemployment insurance for 3 months, and you'd
mm-hmm.
be back to work.
Mm-hmm.
In basically, if not the same position, something similar with the same pay basic.
Mm-hmm.
And we're for not having people making more than about four and a half times as much as the person who is the lowest paid in the country. That's a major, and that's been put to effect, you know, it's been put into practice in a whole bunch of places.
Yeah.
Which means that technically, if I wanted to be real, real, real rich, it would be outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, really outlawed. I mean,
yeah.
to the point that it would be looked at and as a moral degradation.
It is.
I mean, it is.
I know.
I mean, you know, basically.
And I have no problem with being really, really wealthy if
I do.
You have no. Let me hear me out. If you have a responsibility, if you feel a responsibility to those who don't, it's like the wealthy need to have some type of mandatory charity type thing tied into.
Oh, we got a mandatory charity thing tied into it.
You know, that's all that I feel. I mean, that's coming from an African perspective, that even though the king of a village or the ruler of a village may be wealthy, when anyone had to do without, they went directly to him to provide for their needs because he was ultimately responsible. That went along with being
incorrect.
The ruler.
Incorrect. And that's one of the things that I came out with. That's something that's been placed into African-American nationalist thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally incorrect when you start looking at it on the ground. What was actually happening before the occupation by Europe of Africa,
mm-hmm.
and it's even more so incorrect nowadays.
I mean, now it is, but I had a friend who was from Ghana, and this is what he said happened with his family. That his
I
family
know, that's what they tell you happened with their families, and what they don't tell you happens with their families is that something very interesting and strange goes on,
mm-hmm.
that some families don't get provided for,
mm-hmm.
a whole bunch of them, as a matter of fact. Some families are exiled,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a whole bunch of them, as a matter of fact. And particularly before the advent of Europe, what would happen is that you would find that entire halves and quarters of a village would get exiled and sent out into the wilderness to fend for themselves. Fact.
Mm-hmm. Why? Because they were poor? They had, like, maybe a poor crop or something?
Hey, fact. This is fact.
No, I'm saying, but why? Why would they just be exiled?
Yeah, things like that. Fact.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, things like that. Fact. You know, political, you know. You would have people who were becoming richer than the other people inside of a village, and I mean a lot richer,
mm-hmm.
you know, behind exploitation of one person by another person. And so what would happen is that the richer ones would get together and exile the ones that weren't. You know, it was quite interesting.
But was it for, I mean, where did you get this from? Because I wonder, was it for any particular reason? Was this person had certain traits that they felt that they did not have to work, that they did not have to be responsible?
Once you become rich, you don't, the development of the traits isn't inherent. It's not a genealogical piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's a developmental piece. It's a sociological piece. So
yeah.
You sort of learn it, and you learn it as sort of feudalism develops, even in Africa. And you learn it even as capitalism develops more so, even in Africa. You know, and it's a major problem right now. For instance, when you go down to southern Africa,
mm-hmm.
you got something called the Kingdom of Lesotho. There's so many, there's so many rich people in the Kingdom of Lesotho. It is insane. You ever hear of something called Sun City?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, buku rich. I mean, you know how
yeah.
you know how they used to talk about how rich was into rich, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like buku rich, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got people living, I don't mean like dirt floors, I mean like mud huts and craziness. And people there inside of Sun City wouldn't have to live like that. And these are kings and dudes who are like running around with all this cash. These dudes are not redistributing any wealth. Buthelezi section, he's
mm-hmm.
a king, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His whole operation operating in South Africa, they don't
mm-hmm.
redistribute the wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about doing it, and African-Americans here hear about it. But when it comes down to the ground,
actually doing it.
You have a whole bunch of craziness going on. You really do.
I understand, but I guess I think of it like one of the sisters that I came up here with, she and I, we used to live together. And once I got a house, I did not ask her to move here with me, even though she assumed that she would. And the reason why was that when we lived together, neither one of us are working.
Hold on just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
What?
It's under 40 degrees outside here. But you were saying?
That I had a kid, she had a kid. And then the other thing that I had is that I had a husband who refused to work, and I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both figuring out, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I would go out, and I would look for jobs, try to get into school, whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say I was the one who cooked because she didn't know how to cook. I would come home, and she'd be on the couch watching the cable, you know, and the baby would just be tearing up the house. I'm like, man, why did you let him go in my room? Why did you let him
mm-hmm.
tear up?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, he just do whatever. I can't stop him. Dishes are piled. I'm like, well, you didn't even wash the dishes today? Girl, let me tell you what happened. I was talking to so-and-so on the phone, and he started tripping, got on my nerves, and da-da-da-da-da.
Well,
and this went on for months. And so once I moved, she just thought, okay, we got us a house. We are moving. I was like, no, you real straight. You stay. You do whatever you got to do.
Dig
I'm out of here.
Right
because
on.
I'm busting my ass. And she got angry with me like, you know, I'm sitting there helping Makeda just get her stuff together. And now she's moving on. And she got her a house and she got her a car. And now she ain't helping me. But my thing was that for me to continue trying to help her as I gain things, it was pulling me down because she was not trying to help herself. So I could understand if I had to live in a village with her, and as I, through my own, just we both started at the same point, and I worked really hard, and I acquired things in order to make my children's life better, I could even see making sure that her child got educated and those kind of things. I refused to help her because she's not trying to help herself. So it's like, no, you go, you get away from me, you get away from here, because with that kind of thinking, you will only pull down our whole society.
Wrong. What ends
okay.
up happening? Yeah, that's the piece. Because under our system of operation, she wouldn't be at home. Neither would you. You know, under our system of operation, the kids go into a creche or, you know, a daycare center, usually located there at the job. Both of you work. She doesn't end up staying at home, you know, and this sort of thing. What happens is that although it looks like people are helping each other a lot of times, what ends up happening, it becomes sort of a transfer of labor power from one person to another person, and one person ends up being able, A, to acquire more, B, by working hard and all that stuff, but the other person isn't in what's called the capitalist structural market or, at that time, in a socialist labor force once we start operating. And if you're neither one of those, and if you're operating inside of a home piece, you're almost in the unproductive labor area. And what ends up happening is no matter what you're doing with little kids and all that type of stuff, basically, it's not It's not even about circulating or keeping capital inside of your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What it's about basically is that you're not out producing surplus value. That's the major key to it. And both of y'all should have been out producing surplus value.
I know, and I don't want
to
give you the impression that...
And that's why it doesn't work like, you know, when you're like trying that little thing like you were trying.
Well, no,
both of y'all needed to be out there.
She didn't watch my kid. I took my kid with me. So I'm pregnant with my son. I never let her watch my kid because she didn't watch her own kid.
Well, what I'm saying is she shouldn't have been in the house.
But that's my point. That's my point.
Yeah. And under our thinking is that she would have been working.
And with her working, and that's my point, like about we talked about the Africans in antiquity before Europeans were there, that they how they would push certain people out of the society, that the people who were wealthy pushed the ones who weren't wealthy out.
Yeah, and that is incorrect.
That put us too in that situation where she is not being forced to work, but yet I am choosing to work to better myself.
Because to work under capitalism is not a choice. You see, and that's the second problem. We have to start dealing from whether or not it's not so much you choose or you think that you should work. Remember, this is an objective condition thing.
Mm-hmm.
We need everybody to produce surplus value. To produce surplus value, everybody got to work. Simple as that. And when it comes down to it, you need to, like, delimit it, you know, make sure you got some limitations around, oh, how old the workers are and that sort of thing, so you don't end up with child labor and people running around here acting out and whatnot, you know, and having prostitution and all that stuff. You have to have some sort of limits on it. But in
what do you do with people
who
like
don't
her,
want them to work?
Who just refuse and will use every excuse
there's
in
no,
the book between
you set up,
pain, I have a baby.
You set up a social system
mm-hmm.
that basically does not allow them not to work. Under the social system we would have,
mm-hmm.
after you have your child, you would go back to work. You would have family time off, you know, maybe 3 to 6 months or so that you could take care of the kid, and you're back to work. In other words, there's no welfare. But there is unemployment.
Okay. What about women who choose to stay home and be with their kids and be supported by their husband? Would that not be able to exist?
It can be able to exist, but what that does, unfortunately, and this is not a European descent thing, unfortunately what it does is it puts women who decide to do that in a worse position than if they were to basically send the kids on. You see, because kids...
Well, I have seen where it has worked successfully.
Not saying that it hasn't worked successfully, saying that this is the problem. Children are not going to be at home past age 2. They're in school.
Why?
They're in school at about 3.
But why do they have to be in school?
Because if you want to start teaching kids how to become citizens of a country that doesn't have people running up and down shooting at each other and whatnot, you got to start them early. And it's about age 3, 3.5.
I'm not saying that you don't have to educate them early, but why is it that they can only be educated in school?
Because at home, it's a separate non-socialized structure. Inside of a school, it's socialized, and not only is it standardized, but you also get something called additional skills. Most of the parents out here, quietly as it's kept, even the ones who speak 2 and 3 languages, are not basically good at teaching kids how to learn how to count, or how to learn, and a lot of people taught folk how to count, or how to learn how to do algebra. If you get kids who are trained very well, and I've run into kids like this, from overseas and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
out of socialist countries,
mm-hmm.
one of the things you find is not only are they different, but they look at learning very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at learning so differently that it's a very interesting way of structuring their thinking. They learn because it's a socially productive thing to do in their thinking, as opposed to I got to do this so I can get a job, or as I got to do this because I got to, you know. It's sort of
but
like
that can
art
be
work.
Learned even,
hmm?
I mean, my mother, she taught us at home, and I learned.
Some people it works with. My mom taught me at home, but that's not the way that we're going to move, mainly because to take women out of the workforce, out of a socialist workforce,
mm-hmm.
means that what ends up happening is that they don't have the equal ability. They don't end up with equality at a level. How
yeah.
you doing? At a level that they can go out and deal with things like buying stuff or having equal value inside
of a home. I
understand.
I agree.
Or an apartment,
I agree.
You know?
And I'm like, there has to be some kind of happy medium.
Oh, the happy medium is have women work, get the kids, and put them in creche.
But no, that's not the happy medium to me because I feel that no one can love my children and give them the nurturing that they need as well as I can.
But that's the deal. it's not about loving and nurturing. After a kid is in school, you're not loving and nurturing the kid after age five, technically speaking.
And that's
if
what
that's
I mean.
The case.
Even, I can even go with five or six, but you said two.
Yeah, because what you want to do is to start getting, and this is, you know, far